they've been doing to earn their livings or knows their parents would disown them if they found out. So they lie and send money home claiming it's domestic wages. And they get paid a little better now, so they can send that money home and buy enough to eat. Bit by bit, things get better. If you make them. Anyway, there's shops in Chinatown that sell the kinds of flowers and spices and such the Indian girls like, as well as the kinds the Chinese girls do, and the prices are better there. Even in a gold rush town. So Priya took me into town looking for ground-up lentils and beans, what she calls dal flour and gram flour, and cardamom pods and mustard seed, and I don't even know what. But the bags smelled amazing. And rice. So much rice. I was trying not to think about the money we was spending. Not that we was destitute. We could afford it, for now. But we was still working on getting established as businesswomen. Our infamy was good for something. The demi-mundane trusted me and Priya on most things. But I needed to figure out some way to convince such of the good people of Rapid City as had means and need to keep livestock that I knew my way around a stable as well as a whorehouse. The thing was, we needed money. Not immediate-like. There was enough left of the reward to hold us for a bit longer, and we weren't going to lose the ranch because that was paid for. But stock has got to be fed. And women, too. And feeding don't get no cheaper year by year. And my wife was going to need buy-in into an apprenticeship if she was going to chase her mad science. And then there was parts and tools to think of. I could do some earning, but people won't pay a woman horse tamer what they'll pay a man, though they'll hold her to a higher standard and rate her lower when she's better at the job. I had thought about looking for work as a rodeo clown, thinking the novelty of a girl in skirts flirting the bulls might make a selling point. But you gotta travel the circuit for that work. And Priya told me outright that she'd break my ankle if I tried it. Just the one, so you may still manage the chores on crutches. And that pretty much put paid to that notion. Nevertheless, I'll stand by my reputation for being able to stay aboard just about any old thing you like until it quits bucking. And I thought there had to be a living in that, even if I couldn't cowpoke in a dress. We was outside Mama Cheong's, juggling our paper sacks into our shopping baskets and figuring out how best to balance them on my mare Molly's flanks when we heard a commotion up the top of Gnome Street and more or less froze in place. Molly's head came up, ears pricked, like she was thinking of yanking her reins, but I put a hand on her neck and she didn't. Soften, exactly, but she at least got down off her tiptoes and let her breath out. She weren't used to all this town bustle yet, having just come on a train her own self a month before from hay camp. My old neighbor Lutz had sent her back to me. He'd tried not to take any pay, but I'd given him fair price for her, and her tack, wired by Western Union, so he could afford to buy a mare of his own. I'm a big enough girl, but when Molly went up tall like that, I couldn't see over her withers. She's not quite 17 hands, a strawberry roan with a shoulder blanket. She's a real Nez Perce war horse my da bought as a foal. Her face is fine-boned for a Palouse, flecked gray and red down the long, soft line of her nose, and I was looking at the pink underside of her jaw when she cased the situation. Luckily for me, though it was all pretty unfamiliar to her, she's not a flibbertigibbet, and I got her attention right back when I rummaged in the saddle pocket where I kept the carrot ends and whatnot. I gave her a hard candy and a tired carrot, last year's stock, once I was pretty sure she'd forgotten that she'd been thinking about being spooky. Half of horse taming, or horse whispering, as some mountebanks call it, is thinking like a horse, and then being just a